I wrote this down. Camera flips. Not sure why.
Yes.
That's the scene. Captain's Pod, Stardate 81-56-23.1. Welcome aboard the Starship's Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief shore leave from the world of CinemaSins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me as always, she's on a five-year mission to embarrass me, it's Ambassador Delay!
Okay, so it's been five. So when did I first meet you? How many days left until I've reached this goal? And
it's been 84 years.
I think you have 3 years left. Possibly. Shit, possibly less. Time.
I've never embarrassed you yet.
And joining us, he's the pilot that took over 50 years to get a series order. It's Commodore Dicer.
Oh, hello.
I just wanted you to weigh in on that. Do you think Danae has embarrassed me in the last 2.5 years?
Ian, I'm not sure you're embarrassable.
That's a good experiment that I don't want to do. That sounds like a terrible thing. Let's find all the... Oh, okay. So Danae is now holding up the DERPA prize.
Is that embarrassing to you, though?
No, it's really not.
It should be.
You would think. But as Chandler says, I'm fresh out. Yeah, no, you'd think the DERPA prize would embarrass me, but that was not my fault. That was your oven.
Yes.
That broke that my ship.
The oven's fault.
It overcooked my ship and made one of my nacelles wonky. Anyway, moving on. Are we going to do Strange New Worlds season 2? Yeah, there is now a dog.
Does anybody hear the dog sniffing the microphone right now?
I was going to edit that out in post, but no, I'm just going to leave it in now.
Gracie's like very curious about the microphone. All right.
There is a dog that is currently eating the ambassador's face. Mm-hmm. The Commodore's face.
I missed that the dog was there because I was looking elsewhere and mm-hmm. you said something about dogs. I immediately turned to look at mine wondering what mine are doing because they're in the background just sleeping. They're fine.
Okay. Let's re-engage my excitement. Season 2 of Strange New Worlds.
Yay!
Let's go. So we did our big old recap episode last week. We called it a recap. Really, we just kind of Googled some stuff about season 1 as if we'd never, ever watched it.
Mm-hmm.
This week, episode 1 is called The Broken Circle.
Will it be stranger? Will it be newer? Will it be worldlier?
Yes. All of those things are what I'm hoping for. Ambassador, let's have one big prediction and one little prediction for what's going to happen in this episode.
Okay, quick question. Uh-huh. Season 1 of Picard.
Yeah.
Right? There was all these flashes happening of like this apocalyptic ending that needed to be stopped.
Yeah.
And there was a circle.
Yeah.
And it was like they all got in a circle and they touched the pylon things and then they saw the future and then they went crazy and then they just...
Yeah.
So obviously that's what this is about.
Considering that Picard itself denies the existence of season 1, I very much doubt that Strange New Worlds is going to be acknowledging it, but I'm going to note it down.
But you know what? Somebody on the writing team was like, that was some good fucking stuff.
It was.
Got to get it back in here somehow, some way. And I can't remember the name of the organization that was involved in that, but it was something pretty big.
Can you guess? It would, go on, throw some syllables at me.
Shimbap-a-loop-a-dap.
You're close.
Shimblek.
Close. Closer. Further away.
Free Shavakadu.
Free Shavakadu. The Zatvash. That was the organization created to prevent it. But was it like The Happening or the...
I hope it wasn't like The Happening.
No, because that's terrible. The Exiting?
I don't know what The Happening is.
It was like it was some kind of AI apocalypse thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
No, can't remember what it's called.
That's what's going to happen.
Reckoning? Shimmering? Sugaring?
The Shimmer is in Annihilation.
Okay, no, it's probably not that then. Okay, that's your...
So here's what's going to happen. They're going to regurgitate that story, but like back in TOS time.
Nice. I'm here for it. If we start bringing some Romulans... No, I won't be okay if we start bringing Romulans in, because they're not here yet. Mm-hmm. They are, but then they shouldn't be. Okay, that's your big prediction. What's your little one? What's your oddly specific prediction?
Oh, Pike will say, hit it.
That is not oddly specific, but I'll accept it.
Okay, I guess it's not odd. Pike will say hit it, but he will point his pinky on accident.
That would be hilarious. I'm just trying something new.
He does a cup of tea, hit it?
Yes.
Hit it.
As politely as you can. While if he is sipping a cup of coffee and that's when he says hit it, I will lose my shit. Okay, Commodore, your turn. Yeah. Give us a big overarching prediction for this episode and an oddly specific one.
The overarching prediction is that I will be attracted to every single human on this ship.
Yeah. I'm just going to note that down as immediate boner.
The specific one is I think we're due for a nice nostalgia shot of some sort. So I'm going to say Klingons.
Interesting. Okay. Nostalgia shot of Klingons. Fascinating. Okay, with that, I don't have any more preamble other than the 6 minutes we've just done. So we've presented without further comment. Unless we have anything else to cover, should we just head straight to the holodeck and watch episode one of season two?
Hit it.
Free to beam out. I nearly just beamed two of us out. I nearly left. Yeah,
I wonder why you were hesitating. What happened?
I nearly left Aaron behind.
I'll just be here, guys, sipping my tea.
Pinky out. Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show where we grab a drink from the Repla Porter mat and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched together and possibly reference the outtakes. Most important question first, Ambassador Nay, what would you like to eat / drink?
We're all drinking blood wine today.
Boil the blood in our soul. Make the blood in our veins scream and shit. Let's do it.
No.
Aaron does not.
No, I want some oxygen. If I can just have a big old glass of oxygen.
I just want some physics. That's all I want, people. Yeah. I want some physics that actually makes sense. Okay, we have just watched season two, episode one of Such a Strange New World, The Never-Ending Circle. Ambassador, before we get into the good stuff, synopsisize us.
Okay, in this episode, Lon is stuck. Or is she?
Does she have a question mark attached to her name?
Lon? That's what the apostrophe does in the future.
It was literally the first person that popped into my mind, so I'm just starting there. Yep. This episode's actually more about Spock and his confused boner, but we'll get back to that in a second. Today's episode, Lon is selling weapons to the Klingons. No one asks her about that later. Spock has feelings that make him steal a ship and think dirty, dirty thoughts love.
I liked an A synopsis.
Sounds like your synopsis, Aaron.
She puts the sin in synopsis.
Yeah.
Does Starfleet know about all this? Probably not, because we're rebooting systems. But don't worry, that doesn't actually mean anything to the plot. Do you know Morse code? You're going to want to. this episode of Strange New but Not Pikeness.
Got it. Nailed it.
That was incredible. That was rude.
Now to translate from Danae into English, the crew of the Enterprise has to steal themselves so that they can rescue La'an and stop war breaking out between the Federation and the Klingon Empire. Yeah. While Pike disappears to try and get somebody who's going to help free number one and all of the references and stuff, and it was a tiny bit miserable. But first question, Ambassador, immediate thoughts and feelings, no specifics, gut instinct, you non-Vulcan Vulcan, how did you feel about the episode?
How was Aaron right about seeing Klingons? That's the only thing that matters this entire thing. Did you see a preview? Did you?
Nope.
I don't fucking care about this. Insane. The entire show, the entire Nothing. Episode. Are you Insane. Kidding me?
Not a thing. Did not see a thing.
What the heck?
For everyone listening, I'm the only one that's watched the trailer. These two haven't. And I looked at him and I was just like, well, you've obviously seen the trailer and you're cheating. And I believe him. He hasn't. He
I
hasn't seen the trailer
too.
And he called the Klingons. That's insane.
I told Ian, because obviously when it happened, we talked about it a little bit during the show. But I told him, I said, like, I think I talked about this last year. I could not believe we didn't get Klingons last year. Like, it's just that one little thing that they were holding on to. And I was like, they can't tantric that for too much longer. Like, they're going to give us the Klingons.
I'm really proud that they didn't in season one, because Discovery season one was very, very Klingon heavy. All of Star Trek ever is fairly Klingon heavy.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
But we couldn't get through episode one of season two without mentioning them. And I have thoughts, as you would expect. But other than that unconscionably prescient prediction, hey, that was good. Mm-hmm. Ambassador, what were your thoughts?
Man, I was disappointed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why. I've been trying to figure it out. There's a lot of things I was really excited about. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay. I'm getting back into it. But there's something about not... I'm such a butt. There's something about, like, not starting the episode with just, like, some fucking fun. I was ready to have some fun.
Yeah, right.
And this was just like, everything is serious. War is impending. Right? You're going to fucking die. A lot of murder. A lot of, like, it's chaos. We're beating the fuck out of people. Blah, blah, blah. It's all so fucking serious. I'm like, this feels like something that should be in the middle of the season. And I don't know, because sometimes you come out of the gate and that first episode usually gives you a little bit of an idea of what to expect. And
I think it did.
I hope the entire season is not so serious, but it's maybe going to take, like...
We've got an episode coming that I can't imagine will be serious. Like, I know we've got a crossover coming.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
That's
at least
gonna
one
be
will
fun.
Be goofy as fuck. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know how, like, when Disney will do a remake or, like... Mm-hmm. Okay. Batman. The first time that they really kind of, like... Not first time, but they took Batman and they did the movie... Where it's like his origin story of how it got to be so serious.
Batman Begins. So like
Batman
Chris
Begins.
Nolan took
Chris
it
Nolan's
real
first
world,
Batman. Yeah.
Yeah.
What if Batman was real?
You're watching it and you're like, this is a far cry from the animated series. You know what I mean? We're
or
going
Tim
to
Burton's
a serious
Batman
place.
Or the, you know, Adam West Batman. Every Batman
right.
up until that point. Yeah.
This was kind of like maybe in my mind where Strange New Worlds what left off in season 1.
But the other
one.
Shows are already doing this.
Okay, yeah.
Why
okay,
do we have to do
okay,
this?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Was no, kind of just like this you're sort good. Of like fun space. And then all of a sudden it turned into like this origin story seriousness. And I was like, oh no, I wanted to have some fun. I wanted to, you know.
I wanted to have some fun with the orphan who tragically lost his parents.
It wasn't that I didn't, I liked it. It's just, I wasn't prepared to have to face so many like, oh, this kind of brought my mood down a little bit today. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't prepared for that. I was prepared for something like, I don't know, adventurous in mm-hmm. a different way. In a less war way.
You mean war can't be fun? Commodore Dicer, go for it. Give us your overall thoughts.
Yeah, I mean... No, don't do this. I have pretty much the same exact feelings as today. I found myself bored at times. I found myself feeling like, why does this now feel like every single other sci-fi show of the last decade and a half? Like, it's just, the magic was not in this episode for me. God bless Carol Kane for showing up. Without her...
Right.
Like I may have come out of this going, maybe I'm off the show, guys. Like, I love these people. I love these characters. There's enough foundation from season 1 that I'm going to want to spend time with these characters. I mean, you took one of the main ones away from me this episode, which is fine. I don't mind that. I don't mind like new crew combinations. That
He's
kind
gonna
of
die
stuff.
Anyway.
But that's true. He is on his way to dying. But yeah, I really felt like for a lot of this episode, I was just like, are we just going to punch each other for 20 minutes? Like, what is going on here? Why is this where you decided to go? The first 10 minutes of the episode are just a soap opera. You're just wrapping up all the relationships and things that are going on that you've carried over. And it's just like... Mm-hmm. Get me to the adventure of the week. And then when you got me to the adventure of the week, I was like, this is a really dumb, boring adventure of the week. Like, what are we doing?
Okay.
It was rough. It was a rough one for me, for sure. There are things to like. I will say that. But I did not have a good...
I am confident in saying I think I enjoyed it the most out of the three of us. However, I have exactly the same... critiques and issues with it. And yeah, I did land overall on disappointed with a couple of highlights that I cannot help myself but loving. It's kind of like when you're being tickled, you laugh despite yourself. And that laughter is like, well, laughter's great, but you fucking hate being tickled. It's kind of that. I was laughing and enjoying myself despite being really irritated by a lot of the shit that was happening. Like Aaron summed it up, like that opening is 10 minutes of here's what happened last season and here's all of the hanging threads that we know you know about.
After doing a literal here's what
after
happened.
After doing a literal previously season. On.
Yeah.
And just like being really bogged down in reminding us of everything that happened as if streaming isn't a thing anymore. I get it back in the TNG days if you had to do this, but we have access to all of this stuff. I would say a large percentage of people watching the show probably did a rewatch of season one before they watched this. And then, like you said, as we get
in... I would think a lot of dedicated Star Trek fans did I think the common audience member probably did not.
I'm probably overstating that. But
to be fair, we went through our own recap and we don't know what the fuck is going on either. So.
But I just I don't know that it's completely necessary. In fact, I know it's not completely necessary. And yeah, what you said, Danae, I was hoping out of the gates this to be really kind of fun, energetic.
Yeah.
But it like went deep into... Here's the arc for this season, and I'm sure we will still have Adventure of the Week.
We have to, right?
It can't help itself. Like you said last season, Aaron, can't help itself but play that plot thread. And it's not like this is the first time we're seeing the Gorn. We know the Gorn are out there. All of the stuff with Admiral April is unnecessary. We know the Gorn are out there. We know they're a threat. I don't need to know that they're 10% more of a threat than we thought they were because there's a ship out there. So there is so many mixed feelings and messages in this episode. And it just felt really, really, really messy. But like you, Aaron, I have not by any stretch of the imagination given up on it because these people are incredible. I think we're going to have so much fun this season. This is just a really shaky start where I feel like they didn't hold their nerve on the episodicness-itude of it and the lighthearted stuff that we loved from last season. But let's get into some specifics. Danae, give us some stuff you love before we send the ever-loving shit out of it.
CGI of all the ships is just fucking beautiful. It's really fun to see all the different angles of the ships. And if I have a regret, it's not being in Aaron's movie space when watching, because he has one of those fucking cool TVs where the black is not a projected dark spot. It's just the complete lack of light behind it. So it's just this really nice contrast. And when I was watching the ships and the space and just kind of like these different angles that they're shooting and the fight kind of in space between the two Federation ships, like it looked so beautiful and it was really interesting. Or at the very beginning when all these shuttles are just haphazardly attacking it like a carrion bird on dead carcass, like they're just like they're all like little insects just latching on, and it just would have looked really, really nice on a massive screen, I think. And I just think that stuff is really, really beautiful to look at. And that was probably one of the big highlights for me. I also really loved seeing a full female crew supporting Spock on the bridge. I liked Uhura sort of standing up for her station and kind of putting her foot down and asserting her confidence. I think that was a good character building moment for her, for us to see her confidence in what she's doing and her position that she's chosen. Mm-hmm. But also it's just nice to see somebody confidently saying, you know, nope, I'm not ready for that yet. Let me take care of my business first. And I thought that was kind of another clever wink and nod to the thing that I wanted to see again, which is a strong female presence, just because I think that's a nice bit of stuff to see on the screen. We saw a lot of variety of different kinds of people. And of course, Spock, who is no longer my favorite character.
Oh, okay. We'll wait until spoilers. We'll wait until Resistance to talk about that a bit more, perhaps.
That might change next. That might change next episode. I'm very quick.
Something will change you back on it. Yeah. Non-Vulcan. It's so hard for me to not jump in when you mention something I love as well. This is the best I've seen Star Trek ships since The Next Generation. Like, it is like we are back to building the models, because some of the CGI in like Discovery and the new movies and the early seasons of Picard, it's so dark and everything goes by so quick and everything is so clearly computer generated. We got so many glory shots of the Enterprise that are just kind of, let's take in and let's brightly light it. Let's see the metal on the ship. So I love this. I think it's a gorgeous reimagining of the ship.
Oh, yeah. One moment whenever, like, so the bad Federation ship was throwing back torpedo fart fire behind it or whatever it was doing.
Yep.
Okay. And then, like,
that's solid substance. I think you would have to
fart
go.
Fire.
Yeah.
It's a poo. It's torpedo.
It'd be shark fire at, it was, you know,
it was a torpedo.
Poopedo?
Poopito. Anyway, no. Yeah, Poopito, that's it. So it's throwing those things back or whatever. And then we do like the little, oh, we're shifting around and we're magically getting through it. But we see the part of the ship get hit and kind of the shield makes this almost like a little spray that came across it. And it looked like it got like paintballed almost on the side.
Yeah, I think the implication is that this is like, instead of, it's like the debris, we're actually seeing the debris of the torpedo, which is new. I kind of like it.
It kind of like, it sort of like spattered across like some sort of chemical reaction against the shields. That just looked really cool. And I bet it looked even more amazing on a better, I'm watching it on a computer monitor. So
my goodness,
like,
it's heresy.
And it's like,
heresy.
I know.
I'll be back to doing that next week as well. Yeah, and I'm completely with you on the all-female crew as well. This crew just bounces off of each other so well. It still feels like they've been doing seven seasons of the show instead of their sophomore season. They're just so comfortable. Ortegas is the most chill, comfortable person in the world. It's like Melissa Navia has been actually on that ship for... She just didn't leave. She actually just stayed on there in the off-season as well and has just been hanging out on the Enterprise. Aaron, give us some positives. Give us something you loved. Carol Kane.
Yeah, I mean, I will start with, it is beautiful. I do think the visuals, at least the space visuals, are really, really nice. And I want to mention that I do think, no matter what Danae's shifting allegiances might be, that the Spock performance is still my favorite performance in the cast. I think he is doing really incredible work and is has the highest level of difficulty, I think, as far as what he's trying to do and portray. I think so too. So I did like that. But yes, the big standout is Carol Kane. She's in full, I'm not a witch, I'm your ship inspector mode here. Like, she is,
I'm not a witch, I'm your wife.
She's so good and so fun and so quirky. She was on, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt that she was on, the last thing I loved her on? She's just so much fun.
She's got such a great voice, too,
and she has
she?
Such a great voice. So, I really hope she sticks around and is able to add some of that spark, because I was really glad to see her.
Yeah, she was an absolute breath of joy. She's playing a Lanthanite, which is, to my quick Googling, a new alien. And usually when Star Trek mentions an alien and I haven't heard of it, I'm like, huh, oh, that is new. So they're either new or they've been mentioned in passing in a TOS episode that I can't remember.
Sounds like an interesting alien, though, that's fascinating. Like, living amongst us right now. Like,
They have to come out.
Yeah, they have to choose when they come out and talk to people and say, "Yeah, actually, I'm not human." Very, 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 very cool.
Very Skrull, right? Isn't it?
Yeah,
isn't it Skrull in the MCU?
MCU,
MCU in the MCU, guys.
It's a really interesting concept. You're absolutely right. What a unique thing to give somebody, where it kind of makes sense that this sort of person that's aging visually to us is still very, very young, because she has that young energy the whole time, where she's almost like a kid, like at the very end when she's like, "I'm bored."
What's the worst thing about living forever? You lose the people. No, I'm fucking bored.
I'm bored. Fucking bored.
I've done everything. I have solved every crossword puzzle ever created. I'm so bored. That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, don't watch this episode. It won't help.
Yeah. Oh. So, okay, let's give me something I love. This is, and so you've mentioned Carol Kane was an absolute joy, breath of life to the ship. Let's go. Oh, man, I do love this episode. I'm just looking through my notes trying to find stuff that I actually like.
Yeah, there's some others.
Klingons are always fun.
Like.
Okay,
Klingons are fun.
Yeah, let's talk about the Klingons. I want to dive more into that in the sins, but I really, really love how TNG these Klingons are. So Discovery made the choice of going with this Klingon sect that's very serious, and it's an offshoot of the Klingons that we quote-unquote know and love, and it was very dour, very... This is just like the TNG Klingons for me. We've forgotten about the TOS Klingons entirely, which we'll dip into in sins, but this just felt so familiar. I'm expecting Gowron to pop round the corner and just say, "Glory to your house!" And
Elrond?
Gowron.
Yes.
Get off my ship.
Sorry. I was like, man, I didn't know those worlds were the same.
That's gotta be the quote on the shirt. It's going to say, get off my ship with a picture of the Derpa Prize.
Yes. Because it can only fit me on it because the living spaces have all been compromised due to poor manufacturing. But yeah, I like everything from like their attitude, the drinking, how the prosthetics were unapologetically 90s TNG, which I absolutely loved. And the gold uniform. They found this crossover between the really cheesy, understandably 60s uniform that we saw back in the day and then the uniform that we're used to in TNG. Like, they found a really great middle ground. So yeah, I really liked that. It didn't feel like a callback. It didn't feel like a cameo reference. It felt like this is where the Klingons are in the world. We've just come out of this big Klingon war, and this is how they're going to be in this season. And we got to see the D7 battle cruiser, well lit, not a passing shot, just bam, here's one of the most iconic Klingon war vessels that we see on screen. I was always going to love that. That sucked me in.
Mm-hmm.
Danae, let's go for some more positives.
I think it's interesting what they're doing with La'an as well, when she's pairing off against the Klingons, Klingons specifically, like at the table, and they're doing this sort of like blood wine drinking battle.
The Indiana Jones drinking battle?
Is that what that was?
Indiana Jones wasn't the first to do it, you dick.
It was the first to play the gender aspect of that game in the exact same way. It's the exact same scene. Yes.
I think it's now part of pop culture.
It's fair. I don't mind homages. I really don't, but that's clearly an homage.
Also, Star Trek was made first.
This show does homages.
It does.
It's probably not... It's not wrong of us to think that it might have been very purposeful.
Mm-hmm.
I liked that exchange between the two. I think one of the reasons I enjoyed it was I was wondering if the rescue mission was going to be damsel in distress, like, so to show that she's not really in distress the way that I expected it to be. I expected her to be a prisoner or
exactly
being sold in some sort of, like, I don't know, fashion or something
which
like this.
Which Star Trek has absolutely done that before, literally taken its two female people on an away mission. They end up getting kidnapped and sold as sex objects. So yeah, I'm completely with you on that. This was literally like, this is for info, this is an update, like, I'm doing my own thing, FYI, Starfleet needs to know about this as well. So that was a nice little subversion to that kind of that storyline.
But I get the idea they're kind of bringing La'an to this place where she's deciding to rejoin the crew, and but we're still seeing her in her choice to be separate from Starfleet, but also still involve them in something really, really dangerous. And I don't know whether it's believable or not that Spock would, like, take the ship out there. But I think the idea that this episode is trying to present is that when Spock, because they actually say it very specifically, when he released his emotions, he is now experiencing, essentially, it's like Inside Out. Is that the name of the movie from Pixar?
Yeah, sure. Uh-huh. Yeah,
it's like Inside Out, but like Spock's version, where they're all kind of running amok and he might not be completely in control. So maybe we're to believe that he would take risks differently or feel emotions differently. And we see that for him throughout this episode, especially as he is wrestling with how he feels about Chapel or losing Chapel. And so, yeah, I thought that it was cool to sort of see La'an, and then also how they come out to get there. We're commandeering a ship, which seems to happen a lot in Star Trek.
I was about to say, we've got a stealing the Enterprise cliche.
It seems to happen a lot.
I've genuinely lost count how many times they've stolen their own ship to do a mission.
I literally wrote in my notes, yay, it's a heist episode. And then it was over in like 10 seconds. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that's not what
we're
doing here.
And that was so fun. I thought we were going to have all of them on like their different missions.
Yeah, yeah.
And like maybe a cross screen, like they do in Ocean's 11 of like all of the things. But it's just the one officer going to engineering, faking a warp core, and then...
And then Carol Kane shows up.
Yeah.
Pelly says, you're gonna do this, do it right.
Do it this way. But having said that, I love that. And I do love the scene that leads to with Spock's make the ship go now line, which Aaron was eye rolling so hard because we've just had a discussion about...
I'm just kidding, I'm sticking it here
because I liked it. For me, this moment
well,
really,
if you were
really
going to come to me for anything else I liked, you're stealing the one thing I have left to talk about.
Yay,
so.
I'll do it. I'll let you have that. I actually hated it.
I actually landed on that. I felt it was cute and fun. However, I think what I'm experiencing is they are tiptoeing right up to that line mm-hmm. between self-awareness and self-parody.
Yeah.
And you don't want to trip over into self-parody.
Especially
and they're getting
in Star Trek.
Really close.
Yeah.
So, but I did enjoy, like, I thought it was cute and fun, and the self-awareness is fine. I think that's great. And I think Ortegas has a lot to do with why I end up enjoying that scene, mm-hmm. because I think it's a very naturalistic performance that's mm-hmm. given there, and it makes the scene work for me, so yeah.
Yeah. No, I landed on loving it as well, and just Spock is beautiful. You said it earlier, Ethan Peck does have the highest level of difficulty, and he nails the Spock awkwardness without making it seem cliche and
tricky. The Spock awkwardness.
The Spock awkwardness. Nails it without being cliche or like, we've done this all before. It's just so fun. His delivery of, I would like the ship to go now. So good. I loved it.
Now. So his trigger word is just the word now, which is going to be very confusing for the rest of him being just, I need to go to the bathroom now. Oh,
shit. Let's go. That's amazing. Yeah, I'm there with you on that one. I really enjoyed that. And I'm really liking La'an. Are you, Aaron?
Like,
I'm,
no.
No, I got the feeling you weren't.
No, I am, is the character I have the most difficulty finding some sort of rhythm with. I just, for whatever reason, I find that performance to be stilted and inauthentic. And I don't know what it is.
Well, she's really guarded.
She has an accent, Aaron, okay?
That's what it is.
She has an English accent.
My racist tendencies just came out. I apologize. No, it really is something about that character and that performance that is just really hard for me to connect to. So, yeah, the La'an stuff is the weakest stuff for me.
Well, I'm enjoying it, so screw you.
No, that's great.
That's my critique of your critique.
It's just not for me.
There were a couple of individual moments that I thought were really, really cool. Like a couple of shots that made me sit up. And one of them was the POV transporter scene, which we had a couple of times in TNG. Mm. And I love the chaos of Spock shouts the order to beam them on board. And we're suddenly in this dizzy mess of, hey, this is what it would be like to be inside a transporter beam. And just that, it was so visceral and just a really, really cool like kind of interpretation of what it's like to be transported. I really, really like that sequence.
I just want to say, sorry. I was going to mention a comment, but we don't do that, do we?
I mean, you can do it now.
Nope.
I will
do your show the way it's supposed to be done.
It will literally be easier if you do it now so that I don't have to cut this out.
No, I was just going to say Nick gets it. Like the La'an thing, he says it even better than I did. He says, she feels like she doesn't belong on this show. She's very much a Discovery character that got stuck on the fun show. That's what it
That's
feels like
true.
To me, too.
I would
That's
disagree with that.
Nick
I, that's
said how I disco feel. Disco character.
You're not allowed to have your own feelings.
Disco is very different. Okay?
Disco is different than Discovery. Dance. Yes, thank you. Thank you, Danae,
I'm
for
honestly
clarifying.
Kind of glad that you brought this up because Nick wrote Disco, not Discovery. And so I'm like, a disco character? I was over here confused. I'm like, bell bottoms and, you know, music and shag carpet.
Man. Yeah. There was no, go on, Danae. I was about to just ignore your turn.
Well, I was going to ask you guys a question. So this episode sort of gives us an indication at the beginning with like something's kind of feeling off with the brass, you know, the Federation. Something's not feeling quite right. And then
eyes rolling?
And at the end of the episode, the indication is that so Spock, you know, commandeers the ship and he goes out to look into what's going on with La'an. And then they end up blowing up the Klingons hiding inside of the Federation ship because they were going to try to incite another war because peace wasn't really working out or whatever. And then so Spock's like, he gets a little slap on the hand for doing that. And they're like, yeah, you know, your punishment's being hung over or whatever. And then they kind of cut back to the brass Federation officials in charge. I didn't fucking understand this exactly, so maybe this will be something that's fine. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I think is the idea here that they were part of this ruse to start up a war?
No. They're just saying we're glad we don't have to go to war with the Klingons because we're already at war with, I wonder what it's going to be.
That slow delay on the Gorn title revealing
itself. What software waits that long?
What's your matter of timing?
We're getting into Sims territory here, guys.
I just rename the show Gornhub. Like, you know what I mean? Like, at this point, like, we get it. The Gorn are going to be the big bad. Why do we have to keep referencing it every episode?
Hey, I'm with you. I am with you on that one. So
sorry. It was my least favorite part of the episode was shoehorning in the Gorn bookends.
Shoehorning?
Yes, exactly.
No, you're absolutely right to be confused, Danae, because it is confusing. But this actually links into my next thing, which I kind of liked, was I think it was heavily hinted that the Ferengi were the ones that were setting up this war so that they could start cashing in on the profit from the dilithium mining again. Because La'an said the race that is kind of behind this, their whole ideology is profit. So the who behind all of this isn't actually named. So I think it's the Ferengi that are pulling the strings here, which is kind of cool. I like that.
It is kind of cool. And it's something that somebody in the chat mentioned earlier. So that's kind of like super, super
in line
with.
I didn't steal it from the chat. That was my own independent thought. Believe me. But yeah, that was absolutely the war thing with the Gorn is totally separate. They've detected a ship that is incoming that looks aggressive and they're worried.
The show didn't do themselves a favor then by saying something's going on with the brass. So that was supposed to indicate that there's a war coming with the Gorn.
Correct. Exactly.
Not that they're, because then we went to this mining civilization that we share with the Klingons.
Which is the most insane thing, by the way.
There's some Federation people that are in on this too, is what La'an was saying. La'an was saying that there's officials from like Federation and from the Klingon that want to restart the war. So I guess I was a little confused.
They're
about
mercenaries. It'll be mercenaries that were also profiting from selling arms and the usual kind of war is great because we get to sell bombs and shit.
Yeah, it's an extremist group that you know, they're doing a false flag and
a little bit of everybody is in on it.
Okay.
I did really like the building of the ship underground and then it suddenly like bursting out of the cave and launched just like.
Is that Cinnable?
Oh,
I was going to ask you if that's Cinnable.
Of course it is.
Okay. I think it's Cinnable
too. Just like a starship coming out from underground.
Oh, it sounds
a little
bullshit.
Ridiculous.
It's like Thunderbirds, where Tracy Island, and seven people will get this reference. Tracy Island, kind of the palm trees fold so that Thunderbird 2 can come out.
Yes.
It's all of the bullshit.
Yes.
But I just.
I've never seen Thunderbirds.
You need to watch it right now. We're going to stop this and do a Thunderbirds podcast.
No.
Aaron, let's do some, give us some wrap-up thoughts, anything more specific that's good or positive that you want to talk about before we start some sinning.
So anything in the negative category goes in the sinning?
Yes, correct.
Okay, then I'm done.
Ambassador, come on. Give us some good stuff. Oh, hey, look, we got some more Mbenga backstory. How'd you feel about that?
So, I guess...
Wah.
Oh, shut up. Get off my bridge.
There is something interesting about the storytelling, how they decided to tell more about Chapel and Mbenga's background, because they sort of just like blanket statement that they've been in a war before. We sort of pick up with their interactions that they have had some very serious trauma and have overcome it. And we had this thing that we noticed in episode one, somehow, for some reason, that like they have this sort of inside joke between them with the rabbit and the whatever. Do you remember that from
they name a planet. They're just like, Alpha Cygnus Centauri.
And it's when the aliens are beamed aboard the Enterprise and then they escape and then they have to go find them. Okay. So we're like, well, they obviously have these secrets between them, this sort of like code between them. And this episode does a very similar thing. It gives more weight to their history. I didn't think it was bad. It's serious. It's like, it's a serious thing to watch, but I thought that the writers did a good job and I thought that the actors did a good job of showing us that they kind of don't want to go back into this trauma, but they will if they have to. And they kind of have to. They even like inject themselves to survive and turn into like war machines for a hot minute. That was unexpected. I thought that they were going to turn into Klingons when they injected themselves.
I thought we were doing an episode one callback where they the genetic manipulation. I turned to Aaron and I was like, oh, we're going to get cosplay time. I was really excited. And then super serum.
Listen, I didn't get to see Chapel as a Klingon and I'm angry. It's really the main reason that I'm
you would have passed. The blood would have rushed away from your head so quick you would have passed out.
So I didn't think that that was bad. I was surprised that we were in a more serious episode. But thinking about it, I thought that they did a good job of giving us really good information to support why the doctor and Nurse Chapel turned into battle bots this episode. Like, you wouldn't think that they would be in that role. You would think that you'd have La'an coming in or even Spock coming back and just like rage killing people. But it's truly a M'Benga and Nurse Chapel were seconds from dying unless they figured out how to save themselves and the entire Federation. So it's like, and stop a war. So it's like, whoa, they just did a fucking lot. They just did a lot. And it makes me think, wow, they've been through so much because they're good under pressure. Not only, so they inject themselves, they turn into battle people, they send a Morse code, they go out of an air hatch. Like, this is on, I didn't see that coming. And I feel like the show is wanting to give something really big and important to these two characters that are often more like just regulated to the doctor's office.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe for the rest of the season, they're going to be regulated to the doctor's office. But at least we all got to see this one cool moment where they got to just kick some ass and it made sense to the season.
You mispronounced boring.
Yes, because there is a difference between like combat medics. So the Federation obviously had this big war with the Klingons, and it being a doctor meant more than just doctoring. It meant kicking some butt as well. So I see where you're coming from, actually. I get what you mean. I'm fine with this backstory for them and this bond that they have and this stuff that they had to go through. It, for me, just felt like it was a weird choice to put it in episode one. It felt like this is some exposition that could have been done a little bit later. I didn't need all of this darkness and Star Trek John Wick chapter 4 inside.
It was really crazy,
like,
yeah.
Maybe a solid 5 to 10 minutes of punching, kicking, violence that is, hand on heart, not what I come to Star Trek for and not what I come to this episodic TNG Star
you
Trek
have
TOS that I'm looking for as
30
well.
30 different Marvel shows you could go to for that kind of nonsense.
Right. Yeah. Like, yeah. I do not need Super Soldiers and John Wick. It felt so, and I hate saying this, un-Star Trek. It didn't feel right. Unless you're going to make the episode about diving into this and the complexity of what does it take to win a war and how far are you able to go. This felt more like, this is the premiere. Let's make it exciting. And we have to have an action scene to bring people back. It just felt like it was lacking confidence in what your brand is and why people are loving Strange New Worlds so much. Maybe I'm on an island with that. But for me, I wasn't coming here expecting M'Benga and Chapel to start doing some kung fu. That was not on my list of things that I wanted.
That was not even close to kung fu.
Well, you know what I mean. I know kung fu.
I think, and this can maybe transition us maybe into the sins of the show.
Well, I have one more thing before we move into the sins, is that I want Pellia's fanny pack. Did you see the red fanny pack that she had?
I didn't. No.
So she comes onto the bridge and she has this like red bag that's around her waist with a little Starfleet Delta. I want the fanny pack. I think that's it. Let's do it. Let's go to engineering and fake a warp core breach. Battle stations, everyone.
Warning. Warp core collapse in 10 seconds.
This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sin brains, remind ourselves that no TV show is without sin, even our beloved Star Trek ambassador. We left with you, so let's start off with you. Continue.
Yeah, I think we'll just like start in that scene. Sometime, would we sin exposition? Yes.
Yes.
Because we sin sneezes. Guys, we sin whatever, just for fun or for whatever reason. But like this serum suddenly turns their bones hard enough that they can punch a Klingon and not get a broken bone. Like,
can we call it does, punch punch?
It's some the punch some, punch. Whatever, nice. Whatever happens with them, we just have to fill in a lot of blanks with our imagination and then know that there's like a ticking time for it to wear off, which I didn't necessarily mind. And maybe I could have mentioned this before we switched segments, but like there's this moment when the serum wears off and they keep going, which is, I guess, a testament to their like training and their survival instincts and the adrenaline rush of what they're doing,
mm-hmm.
and that desire to live even beyond being augmented to survive. So that was an interesting thing to think about, like knowing that you're not going to be able to do this for long and still go, like still fighting to survive. That's an interesting and very deep thing to watch happening on screen. But But I was just, I don't know. I just felt like it was very confused. It looked cinematic as fuck. I really, like, when they, like, they synchronized injection, synchronized dropping, synchronized stuff. But I did not see that coming. I lie. Why? Sin. Why aren't you Klingons? Sin.
Right.
Why are, Sin.
But that would have been
become
Star Trek.
A Klingon. Go covert. Like, that'd
disguising
be fucking
disguising yourself as a Klingon and sneaking onto the bridge and doing some shenanigans would have been the
who
most Star Trek thing
it.
They could have done.
Yeah. Who cares if you did it already? And that hurts. Growing those little protrusions out of your forehead hurts enough. You don't need to, like, be breaking knuckles, you know, punching people to death.
It was such a hard left turn that I did not expect, because the eyes were changing. No. They were doing some physiological stuff, and I was like, we're going to get some Klingons. That's all. Oh, you're super soldiers now. It's such a bizarre choice. And I figured that they may have to do some, like, explaining about, hey, this is illegal. You're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to augment yourself. And they will have to answer for that. But
right.
I don't know that they will. I think this is just going to be possibly forgotten. I don't know. Rip on it, Dicer.
Look, the only thing I wrote in my notes about that scene is lame punch. That's literally all I wrote. Because the entire thing is, in my opinion, a complete waste of time. It is absolutely, look how cool we are. We're going to have our characters punch people. And it's like, characters punch people all the time. Like, it's not that cool. It has this moment that I think kind of, in my mind, encapsulates how this entire scene misses. There's this moment where they're dropping through a hatch and they make the camera flip all the way over when they go through. They come through and the camera flips all the way over back. And it's like, that is a pointless camera move. It does nothing for my understanding of the scene. It does nothing for my enjoyment of the scene. It's you going, hey, look, I can put our cameras on a spinny thing. Like, it's literally makes me know I'm watching a show, not having an experience. And that's that entire scene, and it goes on for so long. I absolutely hated that section. I wish it had not been in there, because it really hurts. That part hurt.
I thought we were going for like a gravity shift or something to like a different deck, but no. It was literally, no, we're back to where we started. That was the weirdest transition I think I've ever seen in television.
I wrote this down. Camera flips, not sure why.
Yes, there's the scene.
But I think I am supposed to like it. That's what I wrote down.
For reasons, I've just watched a John Woo movie, and it just reminded me of some bad 90s John Woo-ness where we're just doing shit with the camera because we think it's cool, and it was nonsensical to me. That entire sequence is was the biggest sin of the show for me.
And I think it also comes from a series of things I've watched recently that all end with people punching each other, and it's just like...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. Like, people shooting each other and punching each other, I'm just kind of done. I'm just kind of done. If you want to bring swords or sabers or kicks, if you want to bring, you know, like some really cool kicks maybe.
Yeah,
maybe arrows, maybe some bow and arrows or something. Like, like, if we need to do combat, like, I'll have a little bit of fun with those, but stop punching and shooting each other. I'm just so bored with it.
So, can I tell you guys something else I wrote down in that scene before we move on?
Please do. Please.
I will give all the sins back if this was all in their imagination.
Yes!
Like,
it was just
a
hallucinogen that they took?
Yes. I thought that there was a split chance for just a minute there. So, because it just is such a hard transition that we go from them standing to them starting to punch and stuff. And I thought, like, again, that they were going to turn into Klingons. So it's like, they're like seeing themselves turn into these battle creatures or something. And then it's just like, it went on a little long. I was like, is this in their heads? Like, how funny would this be if this is just in their fucking heads?
Oh, I can see it, man. That would have made up for the whole thing. If
really
we get through
would.
That entire scene, and then all of a sudden it cuts to them just in the hallway, just kind of like waving their arms a little bit.
Like
all messed up, just kind of waving their arms in the air and like looking around.
Looking
the
walls.
Nobody's around them. They don't have to fight anybody. It was a clear path, but they're just...
Spock comes back and they're just baked. They're just absolutely baked.
And that's how they survive. It's just like extreme drug
just
use.
Just pity. Nobody wanted to fight them because, like, wow, they are out of it. That would be incredible.
I don't
want to
take over the whole sin section, but I did have another one where it's like, I'll give all the sins back moment. Do you want me to tell you what it was?
Please.
Go for it.
Okay. Let me find it real quick. I think it was when, at the very beginning, when M'Benga, he is talking to Spock about Spock's emotions. He's like, let me get something that helps the humans. And he turns around and I was like, I will give all the sins back if this is weed. Just comes out with a big fucking water bong or something.
I turned around and I said, I swear to God, if he brings him a glass of warm milk, I'm going to sip on this.
And it's like a liar. He's like, here you go.
Yeah.
Here's your harp instrument to play.
Yep.
I was like, oh man. Like we medicate ourselves as humans. Here you go.
This is what we do. Now, as soon as the Vulcan loot turned up, I was like, even if Aaron hadn't mentioned the specific of the Klingons, he got the nostalgia shot.
Yeah.
Because that is
sure.
That is Spock's loot. And we find out that apparently M'Benga gifted it to him.
Oh,
so big nostalgia
shot. That's interesting.
Shot. Yeah, Spock's loot is a big mainstay of 2S. In fact, I predict that we will have Uhura singing with Spock at some point this season, because that was a big thing. Nichelle Nichols would do these beautiful...
That's a positive thing that I forgot to say. I loved the tribute to Nichelle.
Yeah, the tribute to Nichelle at the end was incredible. She would do these beautiful solos with Spock in the series, and it was Nichelle Nichols singing as well. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see that later on. Yeah, really, really cool. I did like that. But back to the sins. We had a heart rate increases when love interest enters the room cliche.
Oh my God. Before she even appears.
Right. And perhaps no more egregious than when a Vulcan does it. I know he's in touch with his emotions, but M'Benga's just like, oh, you got an erection, didn't you?
It's like,
he's just like calling it out.
But the door opens. He was triggered by the door. We don't even see her.
Yeah.
Maybe I missed something, but when I watched it, I thought his heart rate went up when he heard the door opening
It's his Spocky senses.
Yeah, they were tingling.
Oh,
he knew.
I see.
He knew. He can sense her arriving. That doesn't sound any better than coming. Okay,
Well, she did say, I think in that scene, I'm coming on the job or something like that.
Yeah, she did. Just letting you know that I'm coming on.
That's just not professional.
I'm coming on duty. I don't know whose turn it is again. So
it's Aaron's.
Aaron, give us a sin.
I think one of the main things I missed from this episode wasn't just the quirkiness. There was a tiny bit of that. There is no thinkiness to this episode. There is nothing to come away thinking about. There's no kind of conundrum for me to put myself into. There's no kind of deep philosophical issue for me to process. Mm-hmm. It is just a straightforward point A to point B. Characters are going to fight to get where they need to go kind of episode. And it's just, you know, one of my favorite things about Star Trek is I usually come away from the episodes going, oh, that was an interesting metaphor, or that was an interesting deep conversation they had about elephants trampling on grass or whatever the case may be. You know what I mean? Like there's usually some thinky stuff. And this was much more stinky and much less thinky.
Yeah. There was no like metaphorical thing to explore or like moral quandary to come away from.
It seems like it's supposed to be Spock is struggling with his falling in love with Chapel, which is
philosophical stuff. Mm.
Which is why I'm pulling back away from the character now. Which I'm like, God damn it, they've turned this into a love triangle situation.
Oh yeah, let's dive
I don't
into
want
that.
To do
you,
that.
You said you shifted away from Spock being your favorite character. Tell us about that.
It's the Chapel situation. It's like, okay, so we are going to be pushing this season. Like the first thing that they do is present this conundrum where he has emotions or feelings or something he can't even explain towards Chapel. And I don't know if it's towards Chapel or if it's a because at the end of this episode, you know, he's looking at her as she's recovering and she's passed out and he's crying and he tells M'Benga he has no words for how he's feeling. And that's a powerful thing that I have experience now more than ever before in my life, especially now that I'm a mom. There's things I can't really even put into words anymore because there's this new love, fear, pain, confusion. There's all this kind of stuff. And yeah, it can be overwhelming. And like they said, the Vulcans have way more intense, potent emotion that they have to control. So like, I get that that's important, but I really am just... I don't want this to be a season where it's just like a will they, won't they situation, mostly because we've already got TOS. There's already the future laid out for this character. I don't need to be like caught up in the drama of that. And I hope that it's like, well, you know how like in episode one and season one, we were worried that they were going to be over piking Death Us. And I just hope that this is not over, you know, will they, won't they Spock Chapel us.
We talked about it in season one too, though. Mm-hmm. We knew it was, I mean, right from the first episode, they're laying the clues that that's where they want to go. So
I get the temptation with Vulcans and Spock to, hey, what's interesting? Because it's like storytelling is establish your protagonist and throw some shit at them and see how they deal with it. And the biggest thing about Vulcans is the lack of emotions. So it is so tempting to be like, hey, what would happen if Spock did have emotions? The problem is we've done it really, really, really well. You've got to find a new way to do it. And this wasn't that for me. I am worried that they're going to be overplaying the Spock Chapel thing as well, in all honesty.
So I don't know how I would send it exactly, but I would send that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's getting sinned. I got a question for you guys. Have I missed out who she is? So Anson Mount, no. Captain Pike is off to find a she, like pronoun gaming so hard.
Pronoun game.
Was he pronoun gaming? Was this?
Yes.
He's left to find somebody that can help Una, but no deliberately choice. Didn't mention them by name because pronoun gaming.
I would have thought that it was somebody specific that you would know. I certainly didn't know what was going on, so I just assumed that you might know. If you don't know, then...
Yeah, this,
no, I think it was a pronoun game sin for sure.
This Una thing is completely new. We only had Una in the cage, the pilot episode of Star Trek. We just knew she was a first officer, assumed she was human. We know nothing else about her. So yeah, this is all new. The frustrating pronoun gaming, that would be my sin of that one. Aaron?
Sure. I can pull another one. I thought it was really strange, and I would definitely sin it when at the end and Spock is, you know, doing compression on Chapel or whatever, that he phrases it, "You do not die."
You are human.
well, but what's interesting to me is it's the exact same thing the audience is saying, because we know Chapel doesn't die. We're all going, "You do not die. This is not interesting to me because you do not die." Like, what are we doing here?
I kind of wondered if she would, and that was setting an expectation of we're going to change things, like kind of establishing we are in a different timeline where anything can happen, which would have been a bold ass move. And I totally get why they didn't do it. But I wondered if they were actually going to kill her.
That would have been interesting. I would have minded that because I like the Chapel character. Yeah, I just don't like the frustration between the two of them. I really enjoy watching the actor perform this character. And her quirkiness and all of that is really, really fun. So I would miss that.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
I would sin the line from Una. Is it Una Chin?
Una Chin Reilly.
When she says to Pike at the beginning, "There's the Boy Scout in you again."
Mm-hmm.
I'm really disappointed that we still have Boy Scouts this far in the future.
Me too. Me too. Either that or...
It could be just a phrase.
Well, either that or the phrase has made it to the future. Yeah, it could be.
I get so annoyed with that. Like, can that one not be one that lasts?
Yeah, can we just end that one? Yeah, agreed. I'm going to do it on behalf of all of the Star Trek nitpickers out there. This will inspire probably equal parts. Fuck yeah, Ian, get it. And Ian, shut the fuck up. These Klingons don't look quite right. He says and runs away. These Klingons shouldn't have forehead ridges. So the Klingons in TOS didn't have forehead ridges. They were problematic as heck because they were largely, am I right, in blackface, I think, and almost kind of made to look Chinese or from that part of the world, because at the time that was the big,
there was an Asian
quote-unquote threat. Yeah. So yeah, they were definitely dressed up and puppeteered to be like that. Now, I was really, really kind of, in my own internal headcanon, was, it's fine. They did have ridges, we just didn't have the makeup for it. Which goes out the window when Enterprise, another prequel show, which is set 100 years before this, came in and decided to explain it. So, in fact, sorry, backpedal. DS9 tried to explain it. Deep Space Nine did a time travel episode where they go back to the original series and they find a bunch of Klingons, and Worf is like, we're not going to talk about this. Because all of the crew are like, why do you have ridges and those Klingons don't have ridges? And he's like, we don't talk about it. It's a very embarrassing part of our history. We're never going to mention it again. Now we go back to Enterprise, which is a prequel series, which then decided to explain all of that. And basically, the Klingons did have forehead ridges until they got injected with human DNA and super soldier serum, and that made them look like humans. So that's why we lose the ridges. And the ridges don't come back until the end of, like, Kirk's reign. So there's, like, 100 years where they don't have ridges. And these are the Klingons that shouldn't have ridges. There's the end of my thesis.
Nerd!
Now, I can also explain that away by saying not every Klingon was affected by the human genome altering thing. And maybe this is a sect of Klingons that just survived with their ridges intact. And there we go. But look, it bears mentioning.
The one thing I know is that ruffles have ridges. That is what I know.
With that, move on to the next scene. I'm done talking about Klingons and how they look.
It was educational.
Thank you.
I enjoyed it.
I think it's important. I wouldn't have picked up that sin. I don't know.
I think it is important to mention, because these Klingons don't look as Klingons should look in a very fundamental way, unless it wasn't all Klingons.
I think I would sin the new opening intro for spoilers, because it continues the fun of introducing us to new planets that we will probably visit during during the season, which I thought was cool. Some of that stuff was the same, but there were definitely some new visuals in the intro, so.
Which I loved. I forgot to mention that in my positives. Opening credits are just gorgeous, absolutely beautiful. Any more scenes, Ambassador?
Yeah, like all of it.
Amazing.
Hold on a second. I've been looking at pictures of Klingons.
I noticed.
I've been a bit distracted.
I've got a couple things in the category of, I have no idea if these are sins. I just want to ask you questions.
Oh, do it. Yeah, let's go.
Which often happens when I watch stuff.
Question time.
They're talking about Spock's emotions and how he got his blockage cleared. And so now his emotions pour out and they're stronger than humans and those kind of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Spock I knew from TOS was very much had a blockage in, I believe. Like, it wasn't like his emotions weren't pouring forth. So am I missing something in canon? Are they setting themselves to do something to return the blockage?
So they address this a little bit with the episode 10 of season 1, when they're 7 years in the future or more. I think they're 10 years in the future, actually. And Pike is interacting with Spock from the future, and it's like, Spock, you're different, you're more distant, you're more guarded, and basically the assumption is that over the next 10 years he will begin putting up more walls. So this is the youngest we've ever seen,
so he'll install Spock. Extra blockages.
He will install extra blockages and become more detached from his emotions and become a bit more Vulcan. Now there's,
but that's insinuated, not, we don't know of anything in other material that explains
the only other thing is that in the motion picture, Spock has left the Enterprise to go to Vulcan to finish the Kolinar, which is the full purging of all emotions. But that is way after the TV show. So we know that as far as Vulcans go, Spock is more prone to emotions, which is why I don't have a big issue with this young Spock having less defenses and having less between him and his emotions. That didn't bug me nearly as much as I think it will half the internet.
Can two spaceships firing at each other really look like space junk?
I mean,
like, how do they not spot ships firing at each other?
Yeah, I definitely had that written down as well.
Shit, minerals and shit get in the way of the, you know, these old D7.
Oh no, we better not clear this asteroid field. They're nowhere. They'll know we're ships.
Okay. I've got another question for you. Fair. Can they not scan the other ship for humans and beam them off?
Wait, what? No, because they had shields up.
Okay.
You can't transport through shields unless the script tells you can. And in this case, they can't.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
Yeah. That would have been number one.
They don't
one
even scan
sure.
the ship to find out like who's on the ship.
I also think the ship was empty. I think it was automated.
No, there were for sure Klingons on that ship.
When they all just died? Oh, no. Because they weren't planning to die, were they?
Well, they
were. They must have known they were going to die. Yeah. They just died with honor, I guess.
I think they figured it out. I mean, we were told.
I thought they were planning on blowing the Klingon ship up.
Yeah, that ship wasn't going to win that fight.
No, that's fucking true. That's true.
No. So yeah, that was a suicide
mission.
Initiate
something. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that was just they knew what they were doing. But also, if I'm understanding correctly, this ship was built in a cave. How it's even working is a miracle.
It wasn't built in the cave.
No, I think it was.
No, they didn't build Mbenga that from scratch.
Mbenga said that Mbenga they built it down here.
No.
Yeah, because
that's what
hundred sins, at least. That's dumb. That's so
because
dumb.
Chapel
well,
is
how
like,
does it have a like all the
yes,
Federation
exactly.
stuff?
They built it in a cave with a bunch of scraps. They just found debris.
They found Federation transponder debris or whatever? Okay.
How did they know to put in like little pieces of the parts that you need to fly out in space and be
I'm up to 1,000 sins. If that's what that's saying, I'm up to 1,000 sins.
It is an old Crossfield class, so I think they just found bits and pieces and rebuilt it down there. Because Chapel is like, how did they get that down here? And Mbenga said, I don't think they did.
They
I think
it.
They built it.
That's what he says.
Yeah.
10,000 sins. The longer we talk about it.
amazing.
So I think that this ship should have fallen apart when it burst through the earth to come out. It didn't have something where like the earth opens up like a missile silo or something that's underneath the ground. It literally bursts through the ground and then makes orbit and then still isn't falling apart.
I was absolutely under the impression that this was an actual Federation ship that they recovered somehow, and then they found pieces to make it flyable. There's no way they built that from scratch.
I don't know if they built it from scratch, but they built it down there. They put it together piece by piece.
How did they get it?
Let's not say built. Let's say
fixed. I'm going to say built.
No. They had to have found it as scrap, rebuilt it underground, because it had to burst out from underground to get there. So they didn't find it down there.
No, I don't think they found it down there.
No. They had to transport it down there.
I think they found the bits and pieces and then
they
collected
built
them and assembled them
yeah.
down there. They got a big Lego set, basically. I mean, you're right. What should have happened is that La'an should have looked up into the sky and then slowly arched downwards as it hit the deck again.
It should have.
On the horizon,
right?
Roll credits done.
Anyway.
Well, hey, guys, I guess this isn't a problem anymore.
I guess I shouldn't have sent a distress signal for this. Apologies,
we're
guys.
We're fine.
Everything's good.
So, they built another question. Shit. Is the idea here that in this episode they don't have any weaponry?
Who doesn't?
Like anyone. Just
Why?
Weapons in general. Because the whole fight between M'Benga, Chapel, and every Klingon is a punch fest. Nobody has a
no
phaser.
No disruptors, no phasers.
No disruptors. It's all just...
So
I get why
the crew aren't carrying phasers, because they're not supposed to be there. So if there's any sign of Federation weapon signatures or from Starfleet, the Klingons will know that the Federation are there when they shouldn't be. It doesn't explain why the Klingons don't have disruptors.
That's what I'm
and
saying.
Weapons. Yeah, they absolutely should.
Okay.
Yeah. It doesn't
it was
make
confusing.
Any sense.
Like,
oh, my goodness.
I don't know.
I've got a couple of like nitpicky sins that it was completely out of character for that Klingon to give up all of the information. Like, die with honor. Like, that's your thing.
Yeah.
Your thing is to be tortured and you enjoy
every Klingon
it.
Klingon has that built into
Heck
them.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
That is in there. That is not just cultural. That is now built into their genome. Like, they will. Like, rather than
so
get
they not
kidnapped,
have free will?
Rather than get kidnapped, they will kill themselves. Or they will do...
Well,
they will...
I understand culturally that's the Klingon way. I just mean, do the individual Klingons not have free will?
That is like finding the... They do, but that's like finding the 1 out of 10 billion Klingons. And that's
okay,
a
so
leap
it is,
too far.
So it's argumentative. I cut it. I cut that sentence.
No, you don't. Yes, you could find a Klingon that this would happen to, but it is phenomenally good luck. The sin is then the good luck that M'Benga found.
Yes.
The one Klingon.
The one Klingon.
Willing to be submitted
to. Who's not embraced
to,
the culture.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Who also happens to be part of this separatist movement. Oh.
Well, it's also that very cliche thing of, I will never tell you, I'll take all your teeth out. Okay,
exactly.
So it's over there.
I'll tell you immediately.
Yes, that was funny the first 100 times I saw it in a movie.
Wasn't funny when a Klingon does it.
I would also send Spock making it to the beam pad before the doctor somehow. That seems stupid.
Oh, did really?
Well, I mean, he was there to see
M'Benga
and Chapel like materialize, and then he jumps up there
and
starts.
Who would
the doctor
be? Yeah. Well, in the moment, he sees like there's people running in with like rescue looking gear on.
Oh, I just remembered the biggest sin, because Ian yelled in the middle of the episode.
Oh, did I?
Yes, he yelled. Like, this is how huge the sin is. Right in the middle of the episode, Ian goes, where's Kyle?
Transporter Chief Kyle! Where is he? Love that guy! He was the perfect level of sass. I loved it. That was amazing. No, you're right, Danae. I think, that's... How did the medical team not beat Spock to the transporter room?
It's dumb, especially since there's so many issues. You know, the transporter beam pad is like directly across the hall from
sickbay. Yeah, it should be the closest room for sure.
It's almost like they should put transporters in the medical bay. Like,
well, they
it seems,
have.
It seems like that would be really
there.
Smart.
It's wild. Commodore, give us a couple more. Any nitpicks? What have you got?
I mean, how many more do you want?
Just give me them.
All of them?
All of them.
Just, all right.
What have you got?
I've got
100
more sins.
No, you do not.
And every last one of them is that stupid software timing the revelation of Gorn for the end of the episode.
Ping, ping, ping. I was like, oh, they're going to leave us in suspense. Nope.
No, I had to mention that again, because it is unconscionable to do that. It is just, it is so eye-rolly.
It's a weird one.
Here's one.
Yeah, go for it.
The Klingon at the very end. We're happy now because Spock and Klingon are bonding over blood wine, and
yeah,
the Klingon has accepted Spock and turns around and he's like, to the Vulcan who acts nothing like a Vulcan. This is the same Klingon that was like, I don't believe you're a Vulcan because that's just legend. It's like, you don't know fucking shit about Vulcans. Shut up. I just thought it was funny that that was the person that was like, yeah, I don't really believe anything about who you are. But then he's like, to the Vulcan who's not really a Vulcan. Is that what he would say?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what the Klingon would say? No, that's what they want us to know about Spock. They want us to be very confident after episode one that Spock is no regular.
Yeah, they're Vulcan. Hanging a lantern on. Hey, guys, calm down. Calm down in the comments. We know what Vulcans are like. We also know that Spock isn't completely there. So I didn't need that over explanation, but I get it. The internet probably does.
Did you know that Gorns are the main enemy in the show?
No, who was good at singing?
Oh, sorry. I didn't know if either you picked up on that.
It happens. I want to know how Spock ever thought he was going to get away with this when Vulcans can't lie. Like, you're deliberately subverting and lying to Starfleet. Uh-huh. How does he even come up with this plan? It's the whole, at what point do you draw the line of what a lie is? Is it just you verbally can't do it? Because by stealing the ship, you are lying.
Yeah. Yeah, it's those kind of things are always interesting where movies play legalist with their like rules and try to figure out like what the. I remember there was one of the new Harry Potter Fantastic Beasts movies where it's like, oh, we have this spell where we can't hurt each other, but we can help hurt you.
Yeah.
Like, once the spell is meaningless.
And that one's especially dumb because he says, I can't even think about hurting him. Movie over. See you later.
But
then.
It reminds me of the same thing. It's like, yeah, you can lie. You can deceitful.
You can absolutely lie.
Like,
yeah, you can. And you will in the future.
Yeah.
Danae.
I have a couple like just little nitpicky ones I could do
go
too.
For it.
Like when Chapel comes back from death, he had been doing chest compressions, which are known to break ribs, especially when you're strong like Vulcan. I mean, I'm assuming Vulcans are strong.
They are. They actually have super strength.
So I just think that when she comes to him, she's like, why you gotta be so rough? It's like, this in is just talking with broken ribs.
Yeah. That should have been like just gurgling blood.
Well, and then she immediately gets put back in a coma. It's like,
yeah.
Wise crack in 1 second, on the edge of death the next.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Or I could do the one where Uhura goes to tell Spock that something's up. She heard something on the comms and Uhura is in need of assistance wherever, blah, blah, blah. It's kind of the beginning of the episode. And the door opens and she's like, did I hear music? Which is like obviously going to be a wink and a nod to them doing music together now.
Yeah.
Now I know that.
Uh-huh.
But what a creepy thing. What a creepy way to say, like, I was listening to you when your door
was
closed.
It's kind of unprofessional as well to, like,
privacy?
The commanding officer.
No. We don't
was
have
that
privacy.
Porn I heard? Porn far?
Like, she has super hearing, and the door was freaking closed, and he's just gently playing music, and she's like, I heard you playing
music. I heard the lute. You playing a seductive
well,
song?
Well, you know why Vulcans play the lute.
Go on.
Oh.
Because they can have nothing to do with the liar.
Wop, wop, wow. Wop.
That was pretty good, actually.
Thank you.
That was good.
All right. Anything else before I do a little mini segment?
Nope.
So we're going to move into a tiny mini segment, which hands down, I probably won't do an intro for, but it's, hey, guess what was in the trailer, guys?
The line must be drawn here, this far, no farther.
You will die without honor.
Shut up, Wesley.
Get off my bridge.
So I thought this would be fun because you guys haven't seen the trailer.
Oh, okay.
So, what moments do you think were in the trailer
from
this
the first
episode alone? Yeah.
Well,
I want the ship to go, please.
Yep, you know that one. Yep. So that sequence of, hey Spock, what's your thing gonna be? You know, every ship, all of that is in there, and Spock's
the
just
entire
like,
conversation.
I would like the ship to go now. Whole thing.
I'm changing my vote from liking that to not liking that now. I hate trailers.
Yeah.
It's so dumb. Yeah, my cynical brain says the Klingons had to be in there somewhere.
Klingons, Spock drinking with the Klingons is
okay.
In there.
Okay, yeah, the
and
end,
cheering.
The very end of the episode. Yep. Yeah.
We have one more big thing that's in the trailer. There's a
Spock
specific
and,
moment.
It's Spock and Chapel's baby being born.
Holy shit!
That wasn't in this episode. I don't think that's the question.
No.
Them floating out into space.
Nope.
You've seen the trailer.
I have not. That's just the stupidest thing to put in the trailer. Like,
Mbenga.
It's pretty dramatic.
Mbenga and Chapel holding each other and being jettisoned into space is in the trailer.
Wow.
Blue. All I got to do is put in my brain, what is the absolute worst possible way to ruin the show? What did you put in the trailer? Like, it's just...
The strangest thing. So when I said this is one of the most spoilery trailers I've ever seen, I wasn't kidding. Klingons make it go and then getting jettisoned into space. I was like, oh, I've seen this episode then. Great. Wild what they decided to do. Cool. Before we wrap up, let's just talk about your predictions really quickly. Aaron, we know, has watched the trailer and has been lying to us because
I'm a Vulcan. I can't lie.
His prediction was nostalgia shot of Klingons, which we got the ship and actual Klingons.
To be fair, I didn't think the whole episode would be Klingons. Yeah. I literally thought we would get Klingons on like a broadcast or something. Uh-huh.
Nope. It was all the way there. Your big prediction was immediate boner. Did that deliver?
Oh, I'm still attracted to everybody on this ship. It's excellent. Including Carol Kane. I just think everybody on the ship is beautiful.
She was great. Danae, your prediction. It's all about season one of Picard. To be fair, I respect a long shot. It didn't happen yet.
Yeah, they're going to have a baby. That's my prediction.
That's your new prediction.
Yeah.
Your specific one was Pike will say hit it, but he will point with his pinky, which I'm holding on to that. I hope that happens at some point.
Yeah, that didn't happen in this at all.
No. Amazing. Well, we will be back next week, everybody, for episode 2 of Strange New Worlds. And the live show on Twitch and YouTube will be Friday at 12:30-ish CT. Until next time, I'm Captain Ian, and I would like the ship to go now.
Do you want to do this again? Again? No. But no better choice.
And may your podcast scream from me.
Nice. Live long and podstep. Podstep. I'm really tired.
Is that like the podcast-only version of Napster, like no, from back in the day?
That's
Podster?
That's the ripoff of this show. Live long and imposter. And live long and podstep.
Wow.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through captainspod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
Perhaps I should actually go into the studio. Perhaps I should actually try to do that, Mrs. 2 minutes late, Ambassador Danae. Wait, where are the... I'm the first one here? I know that's a really annoying sound, but it's also impressive, right? Like, you're kind of impressed, right? No? Fuck.
Okay, now do the funny stuff.
Hold on being funny. Hold on being funny.
Hold, hold, hold.
And go for funny.
I'm going to take that as a really quick pause because I do want to do some editing shenanigans. Ambassador, before we get into the good stuff, synopsisize us.
I can't believe you're making me do this with that. Like,
do
right
it.
Now.
Do it.
How did I not see this coming right now? Uh-huh. Okay, in this episode, I guess we all know what we're going to have from the trans replicator.
Go on. The trans replicator.
That's yeah, the trans replicator. My boy says trans replicator sounds like a TARDIS component.
It actually is. It's exactly what Doctor Who uses to travel through time. Mm-hmm. Transrepla pooper. Link says, Ian, when you get back home, are you going to show us the ships you've got? Yes,
I am. Oh, shit. That's a really good idea.
Yeah, I'm 99.9% certain I'll do a live stream unboxing, which is something I never thought I would ever do. But I have, I think, 11 ships to unbox and fawn over and touch.
Are you going to call the segment Ship Happens?
Ship Happens, yeah. Masturbation?
Wow.
I don't think I can do that.
I want to give a shout out to Sarah Superior, who actually came to the show earlier and did not watch this episode and did not want to be spoiled on it, but yet continued to hang out
okay.
with us.
I hope you're okay, Sarah.
But watched us on mute, I think.
On mute the whole time.
I love. That's incredible. Yeah. Mm-hmm, I love that. That's commitment.
Link asks us, can we have Aaron do one of the recaps one of these days?
Yeah, absolutely not.
Captain has spoken.
Whoa. 8 says, why did the green vial fall out of the thing and onto the ground? Why was it still filled?
I did wonder that, but there was only a little bit left.
If it used it all, it would have maybe lasted longer.
My thought was like, really, it's so instantaneous you can't put the vial down. Like, I mean, can we, like, can you not prepare for that?
You had to make a mess.
Why does everybody have to break glass?
Mm-hmm. It's dramatic, Aaron. It's drama.
Alex asks, do Klingons have two livers?
They have two of everything canonically, including two epidermises, which I found out today. Literally two of every organ.
Yes, Danae, everything.
Everyone.
I wasn't thinking about that yet, but does that mean that the ladies have two of everything?
Oh, interesting.
Because, you know, we're always just thinking about men.
How does biological sex work with the Klingons?
I do not know.
Okay.
We're going to take a quick break. I like this comment from PD on YouTube that said, I can't even collect enough parts to make a complete potato head from the five sets around my house, and they can scrap and collect enough for a full ship. Sure.
Says everyone who has ever owned a potato head.
Nick does like the boldness to explore Spock's emotion. Nick says, Spock with emotions is interesting, and I really like that they are being bold enough to explore this since he hasn't gone through Kolinar yet.
Mm-hmm. Kolinar? What's Kolinar?
Full emotional purge that Vulcans go through at some point when they reach adulthood. So it's kind of like a ceremony that they are now fully non-emotional beings.
Is it BS, though?
I don't know. I would assume it's all BS.
Is it like a religious thing? Like,
oh, no, this is like, I mean, I guess it's religious, but every Vulcan does it. And you can fail it. So like Spock fails his in the motion picture, which is why he goes back to Starfleet. But yeah, it's a Vulcan thing. It's not like something that,
so they have a scientific way to check that your emotions have been purged?
No, it's a ritual. It's a ritual.
Okay, so it's just believing the person that,
yeah,
I promise, I have no more emotions.
Yeah, and they get observed and stuff. Yeah, we still don't know much about it.
What about the Derpa Prize merchandise? Listen, we can't get our shit together enough to do merchandise. Sorry about that.
Are we doing like a 3D scan of the Derpa Prize and recreate it?
This is my point. Like, there is no way we could mass produce the Derpa Prize because...
Yes, we can. I'm going to figure this out.
It's so, like, structurally unsound that you cannot replicate or replimat that or make more of them.
Listen, I need to know what you're willing to pay to own your own Derpa Prize. And if it's worth enough, I'll get a 3D printer and I will print them.
$300.
I will sell them to you.
$300.
That's how much they're selling for one that's dipped in gold. So like,
yeah, right.
Hello, check, check. Hello. Hello. Does anybody want to do a show?